Welcome to the Spaceworks podcast, brought to you by Comfort Partitioning. In this first series, we will be focusing on adaptable workspaces and how we can better design and challenge boundaries to benefit the user and business needs. My name is Axa Rafiq. I'm a specification executive at Comfort Partitioning. This series is led by Andrew Parkin, Global Head of Acoustics at Kundal, and joining me in this discussion is Anarita Martins, Sustainability Lead at Woodall's Design, and we have Dominic Duggan, Creative Director at Octra. In this final episode of the series, we will discuss how designers and manufacturers can collaborate to create products and spaces fit for future workplaces.
The next and final session that I'd like us to think about is to do with system design and collaboration. And we've got a number of points to talk around on this. The first question I think will be, how can we design products to be more favourable to adaptable spaces? And how will our future spaces look? Anarita, I'll throw that out to you.
Tied up with all of the conversations that we've been having, just really starting from the point that the future of spaces are really understanding the clear link of the building performance that interacts with human behaviour. Therefore, you have also a higher business performance. So kind of the future is really understanding that if you link spaces to productivity levels, to the well-being of your staff, therefore you have better work. You really need to, I only see that the future design will be a universal design for everyone and really apply the best practices, not only, as we just mentioned, the physical access, really understanding if we have a flexible usability for all users, is it stair-free entrances or automatic doors, understanding what will be the journey of a person that is neurodiverse, what are the colors you're applying, the texture, the right contrast, and even going to details such as wayfinding, as I mentioned before, the right maps, auditory cues, or even tactile maps and signage, and really have the right technology on board on that, because technology obviously is linked to what's the future space. And if we use the technology on a positive side, you also are going to have audio and visual equipment to assist blind and deaf individuals. And to the point that you even could help not native speakers within your building. And then obviously at the point that you create safe projects and safe spaces that really minimize risk of injury, confusion or discomfort. And that's applied not only to thermal comfort, lighting levels, even what kind of patterns you're adding to the wall. And all of that then ties up with the sustainable, conscious and circular approach, because I can only see that the future of spaces has to be circular. We do know that if we see a project as a whole life cycle system, we're going to have a better impact, not only as safe costings, but also protect natural resources. And goes to detail of, I think the future is understanding how do you assemble or disassemble your elements, because even if there's a recyclable, if they're bonded together, it's quite difficult to see what's going to be the end of life of that product. And how do you fix your elements? Go to that detail. If it's possible that you use a tape, then you don't damage the element and you could use very easily out there. And conversations about end of life schemes. And I think this is such an important point, because end of life scheme could be in place, but at the end of the life of that element, who is there to really make sure that that element is going to be recycled or repurposed or reused somewhere? So almost creating this kind of links, is it down to the landlord? Is it letter of commitment to the tenants? Are suppliers going to be responsible for that in the future? And we do have to understand what's the control of the transport and manufacturing process. Obviously, supply chain, to have a sustainable supply chain and diverse supply chain, and understanding if you can use as much as local as possible, and understand to a point that sometimes elements are actually manufactured in the UK, but are all those parts coming from the UK as well? So I think the future is really bright, but there's a lot of work to be done. And I just think that if we work together and collaborate across sectors, manufacture, construction, design, we could really shift this industry.
Dom. In terms of products and systems, do we need innovation in products and systems, or do we just need to use the ones that we've got in a slightly cleverer and sometimes just more simple way?
Well, there's always products that could be better. The question is, will everyone benefit from that? Can they afford it? Or more to the point, do they know how to use it? And I think that actually it starts with discipline, and discipline being the user. I know I've talked a bit, like I've got a frustration with clients right now about how they sort of say they want one thing when actually I actually want the belief that they do. And what I mean by that is the company vision for embracing, let's say, environments which are more, when I say environments, I mean the future offices, which are actually more like social and interaction sort of hubs and for collaboration more sort of work side, but interaction more from the social side. If they are that hub that in essence is an intelligent piece of work, and there's a load of like great products in that that supports that, then the investment's worth it. You know, it's 100% worth it. And it's worth it because that business has not just invested, but they've managed the vision. They've managed the onboarding from a usage perspective. They've educated the users about, for example, a hybrid model that they want to introduce. So, for example, the level of focus work that you do from home, but when you're in the office, yeah, and they've defined the purpose of the workplace. And therefore, these pieces will be used, and they're worthwhile. They're a worthwhile investment, and therefore, that will almost like open up the floodgates and almost like for design studios to spend more time and greater investment from an R&D perspective into even better products, to even make those environments even better. So that effectively, even down to the acoustics and how they perform, every aspect of that environment, of that overall environment, is really, really comfortable. So therefore, the point is, if it's comfortable, it's successful. And if it's successful, people will use it, and therefore they'll come in. And I think that's really what the crux of this is about, is yes, they can support it. Yes, they could be better. But let's make sure that the users have the guts to do it, basically.
So the original question was, how will our future spaces look? And I'm going to turn that slightly around and ask the question, how will future spaces sound, AXA?
Ultimately, it's innovation, isn't it? I think when people will describe their office spaces and the areas that they work in or visit or anything, it will be in relation to innovation. It will be something that they've never experienced before whilst keeping a simplistic approach. It's quite a difficult question, that is, because you can't see into the future, but you can to an extent. Ultimately, I think designers will listen a lot more. They'll be a lot more conscious about what comes out of their studios, and ultimately productivity will increase as a return on investment from that.
From my perspective, how spaces will sound differently. Mm. I think we've been used to having the sound of people talking, and that's necessary because we're in an office to communicate with people. Sometimes, though, you're communicating with people in the same office. Sometimes you're communicating with people not in the same office on video conferencing and teleconferencing. Sometimes you have the challenge where you'll have two people sat next to each other, both on a video conference with someone who's not in that space, and you have all sorts of trouble with technology there and delays. I think we're going to start looking and treating sound a lot more seriously than we have done previously. I think soundscaping is going to be more important than it ever has before. We've been looking at speech masking system and white noise systems for a long time, and that's tried and tested technology, and we use it a lot. But I think we're going to be using different types of sound. I think we'll be using biophilic soundscapes. I think we'll be using the sound of nature to help with productivity, but also to help with speech masking. I think we'll be putting real-life installations that create sound. That could be water features, the sound of running water, if designed correctly and with the right visual cues, can be a very good speech masker. I think the way that we control sound will vary as well. We're already looking at so many new innovative materials and products coming out which are using recycled content, recyclable content, which is just as important. We've talked about the circular economy a lot. There's so much innovation coming out at the moment. I think this is a really exciting time. And just going back to one of our earlier points where we talk about the sense of home, what sounds are we used to when we're working from at home? It may be that we've got the sound of the birds singing outside. It may be that we've got the sound of the children in the background. Some sounds we want, some sounds that we don't want. How do we distill the good sounds and take them to the office with us without annoying other people? And that's going to be a bit of a challenge in itself. Come to you, Anna Rita, for closing thoughts, really, on how can we almost future-proof our new, adaptable post-COVID offices? How can we make them so that we are providing true value for money for our clients and they can get years of use out of their investment?
I think that's almost following my latest point, which is not only there's a lot of good things happening at the moment regarding making it more sustainable, more mindful, and resilient and adaptable to the future. And I'm very excited and positive about this new era of construction, because there is very good guidance, there is very good parameters and people that could help you to achieve that. But what I say is you need to start your journey now. You cannot really wait that other people do it and then you just follow. It won't happen overnight. And as Dom as well has mentioned, it's a lessons learned process. And I think I always say this, there's crucial four steps to start this journey. And not only as an organizational point of view, but in your projects. So the first one is really start to certify, assess, and then really understand how to reduce as much as your carbon footprint. And that will be not only embody carbon footprint, but operational. What's the actions on the project? Then secondly, create really design standards, systemize your design standards and create a strong and sustainable framework and apply that and try to really communicate that to your team internally. And then control on site. No matter what you designing, it will be actually happening in reality. So make sure what you design and that is sustainable and mindful will actually happen in reality. And at the last point is really communicate and embrace change, share the knowledge, ask help, and try to really influence others to start their journey. Because as I mentioned, without collaboration, we cannot really change not only the construction sector, but the entire world to be a more sustainable one.
So Dom, what about you? What are your sort of closing thoughts on how we can help future-proof and how we can get people into the offices? And we've talked about the future being bright. How can we make it as bright as possible?
It's kind of as successful, really, as your client. And what I mean by that is your clients, not really your clients' ideas or just your clients' involvement. And what I mean by your client team can sometimes, sadly, just be made up of a couple of people. But it's even better if you really sort of embrace a wider community so that effectively, culturally, there's a level of engagement before even the ideas are born. If you sort that appetite out, i.e. the goal across the business, it doesn't have to be everyone. I'm not saying we're designed by committee, but I think you set out quite a sort of rigorous briefing sort of strategy. We are so keen at starting things well at Optra. Most projects don't start well. I'm not saying at Optra as such, but there's lots of evidence out there that a lot of projects haven't started well and they're limited with how adaptable they are. And I think that will just lend itself to effectively, number one, starting with a really good vision that everyone's buying into by integrating and going further and voicing that vision to the wider team. And I'm not talking about the project team, I'm talking about the user group. Then there's a sort of playback session of their own ideas and responses to that. I think there's about more testing of ideas that we've got to sort of look at, and furthermore, sort of feedback of that testing. And ultimately, over all that, overarching, I think it's about appetite, is a bit of bravery as well, because I think we've all been stuck in this world where it has taken a long time to get to this point. And sadly, it's taken a horrible thing that's taken over the planet to actually get people to accelerate their thinking about how intelligent their workspaces can be. So bravery is a big part of this. And in fairness, I don't just mean to point the finger at clients. I do think, in fairness, they do need a hand. That's our job as the so-called experts. So I think we've got a responsibility to all bring a level of knowledge to clients and try to educate them, be their advisors, not be salespeople, and actually demonstrate we're actually kind of like somewhat know what we're talking about, but actually it's only going to be as successful as them.
And AXA, what about you? What are your closing remarks in terms of how we can future-proof and really make that future as bright as possible?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's looking at scientific evidence. It's considering elements such as the Well V2. It's looking at BREEAM and LEED and effectively the impact we're not only having on the environment, but also on people. As a product manufacturer, it's highlighting the element that it's not one size fits all. Every environment, every client or brief requires a different system, a different solution to the design to optimize your return on investment ultimately.
We've talked about offices, we've talked about change, we've talked about COVID, we've talked about well-being and health, we've talked about how the future is bright, we've talked about how we can help to future-proof things. And certainly one of the key points that we look at in office design is we're designing for people, and offices are a place for people to be great. People have the choice of working from home. So what makes them choose to go into the office? How do we encourage them to do that? And one of the key things is getting to know your client. You have to understand the organisation that you're designing for. Because if you can't understand them, then how can you interpret their requirements and needs in a physical format? Sometimes clients don't really know what they want, and they have to be shown a number of options, talked to about various different things to give them those ideas. But our duty as designers is to help them along that way and help them in their journeys. And sometimes we can talk science at people, and we can talk about research, we can talk about these various criteria, which mean something to us as designers, but maybe not to the lay client who hasn't done this kind of thing before. How do we humanise? How do we normalise the things that we're talking about? One of the things there is benchmarking. We benchmark their existing premises, and then we can give them a point of reference for how much better or indeed different the new premises are going to be. So there's a lot of responsibility on us as designers, as suppliers, as contractors, as manufacturers. But certainly the future seems to be bright. I haven't seen quite so much movement in the office design and office procurement market as in recent memory. So that's all a good sign. So I'd like to thank very much our three panellists. Thank you, Anna Rita. Thank you, Dom. Thank you, AXA. Just like to thank you for your time, and we'll be in touch again soon.
This podcast was brought to you by Comfort Petitioning. Thank you for listening to the final episode of our Adaptable Spaces series. If you enjoyed the conversation today, please subscribe to our Spaceworks podcast to hear upcoming series with industry thought leaders sharing their insight into future design.